members, good morning, and the guests from Rastafari, from Public Enterprise, actually. We'll do it from here because we've got copies of the presentation. Otherwise, we will waste time. And time is already against us. We've got many meetings to attend to. My name is Priscilla Temba. I'm representing Pumala in the National Council of Provinces, a member of this committee and the chair. So I think we would like to know who with you in your team, and then we'll get to know the members also. But let me give the opportunity to members first to introduce themselves, and then from there, we hear how Rechtsstaat is actually promising us that jobs will be created instead of jobs being, you know. Honorable Groenewald, can you just start by introducing?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Herman Groenewald. I'm representing the Northwest Province, member of this committee.
I'm Wesara Jacobs, representing the Free State.
Good morning. I'm Onyao Zubir, representing the Western Cape.
Morning, I'm Phil Hannett.
Good afternoon.
My name is Patrick Sivande. I'm also a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dirk Feldman, representing Gauteng.
I'm Sam Maluana, from the department, DPE.
Tabelo Khari from Alexco.
Peter Fonsau from Alex School.
My name is Anthony Kamungoma. I'm with the Department of Public Enterprises.
Tony Krogler, Alex School.
Katie Wehmer. Katie Wehmer Seko from Alex School.
And Jeff David, my manager, Alex School.
Katiohoya, are you the only woman? Maybe during your presentation you will be able to explain. Because this is a project and if women are putting hands on, then it will succeed. Nonetheless.
Thank you very much. And yes, I hope that I can represent more women.
Thank you, everybody, welcome. I will start. I mean, unfortunately, we're unable to do the presentation on PowerPoint, but I think everybody has a copy, a hard copy. So, due to the time constraints, I think we'll just start with the hard copy. If we can move on to the first slide, and that is the introduction. The purpose of this presentation, I believe, is to provide the Select Committee with a progress report on Alex Core's restructuring.
Just a second. There's one member who didn't introduce himself, and I would like him to do so, because he's actually from where Alex Core is.
No, thanks, sir. That's really deep down. From the Northern Cape, but not from Alex Core. I'm not from the Rechtsstaat. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. So the purpose of the presentation is to provide an update on Alex Core's restructuring process. The presentation will include background details on the mine restructuring, on the structure of the financial separation packages offered to employees, and a progress report on the social and labor plan and its obligations. And lastly, a progress report on the on stakeholder engagement. If we can start by looking at the current situation at Alexco. Currently, Alexco has land mining operations, which was restructured in 2007-2008 financial year with the closure of Alexco's own mining teams. So Alexco actually does not have any mining teams currently. What Alexco does have is administration, processing plants, and maintenance, and they have continued with these interim measures until the PSJV, which is the pooling and sharing joint venture with the Richtersveld community. Pooling and sharing joint venture with the Richtersveld community, and I will touch on that a little bit later. All the non-core mining activities have been transferred in terms of the deed of settlement, and I will speak briefly about the deed of settlement, and that includes the farming, agriculture, farming, dairy, and mariculture. They've all been transferred to the Richtersveld community. After extensive consultations and engagements with labor, the restructuring process was completed in July of 2008. And this was in accordance with Section 197 and 189 of the Labor Relations Act. The total workforce of Alexco was reduced from 276 to 111 in July 2008. The current mine production is sourced from contracted mining companies, and there are three contracted mining companies on land and 27 operating in shallow water. Next, I'd like to give some background on the restructuring, and just to give a little bit of context to the restructuring process. The successful land claim of the Richtersveld community culminated in a deed of settlement for the restitution of land to the community. As a consequence of the deed of settlement, Alexco was obliged to do the following things. It was obliged to transfer the agricultural and maricultural assets to the Richtersveld community, and in future to transfer the mining operations to the PSJV, which is the joint venture with the community. The transfer of the agricultural and maricultural assets to the community took place on January 2008. During the restructuring process, the focus was on the people affected and by the restructuring on the restructuring initiative. Alexco tried to ensure that employees were treated with fairness and dignity, and we also ensured that we provided a decent package to ease impact on employees. At all times, we provided supporting initiatives such as training to improve employability and transition, support that was needed for employees seeking new jobs, and that was the training of portable skills. And it's also one of the requirements of the social and labor plan. Then there was engagement during the process, there was extensive engagement during the process with various internal and external parties. And we tried to ensure legal compliance at every stage of the restructuring. Just to talk a little bit about the deed of settlement, I mentioned that it was culminated after negotiations with the Richtersveld community and with involvement of public enterprise and other parties. And the deed of settlement requires Alexco's land mining rights to be transferred to the Richtersveld Mining Company, which is a community mining company that has been set up. Alexco will retain its marine mining rights, and they will pool the marine mining rights and the land mining rights in a pooling and sharing joint venture that will be jointly mined by the PSJV. And Alexco will retain a 51% stake in the joint venture and the community a 49%. Alexco will further pledge its land, so it will pledge its land mining, its land and marine mining rights to the PSJV, although it will just be the holder of the marine mining rights. Alexco's movable assets relating to agriculture and maricultural businesses have already been transferred to the Richter Salt community. Can move on to the next slide. And just to touch on the financial consequences of the restructuring, Alexco Mining was not a profitable mine and the funds were limited. And there was a great need for Alexco to actually be recapitalized. And so the discussion around restructuring had been on the table for a long time but was put on hold because of the negotiations with the Richter Salt community and the PSJV to be established. Alexco management wanted to act as an exemplary employer during the process and ensure that the approach was integrated and holistic and that the stakeholder engagement was viewed with a critical success factor. The next slide shows a breakdown of the employees and between the farm and the mine workers. If you see the first chart, you have 198 mine workers and 78 ABT, which is the farm workers. The farm workers have now all been transferred to the Richter Salt Agricultural Holding Company. It says that approximately 100 ABM, which is the mining positions, were ring-fenced for care and maintenance operations until the PSJV takes over. And maybe I just need to expand a little bit on care and maintenance. I mean, care and maintenance, we don't mean literally care and maintenance as in some mines would describe it. What we've done is we've put the mining, all the land mining is basically on hold. We just have mining of tailings, dumps, and cleaning off around some of the remnant blocks. So there's actually no mining of virgin blocks, or any virgin blocks being mined at this point in time. Apart from an area that does not fall under the area to be transferred to the community with a joint venture, which is an area called Bidfrakop. And there we have two groups mining. We've got a women's group, and we've got another developmental group called the Alex Cole Foundation. It's called Natantu. It's a group of about five or six women. The next slide looks at the interim organizational structure. And we say the interim organizational structure because obviously Alexco is waiting for the establishment of the pooling and sharing joint ventures to take place. Therefore, the mining cannot happen at full capacity because we are actually restricted from mining certain new virgin territory. So the structure currently looks like this, and on slide number 9, we have the marine mining and the land mining, which will be then transferred to the PSJV. We have support services, we have the rehabilitation, and the township. And in the rehabilitation, we have also the involvement of some of the community members. And we've tried in all of these support services and so on to try and look at utilizing as best possible any former, Alexco employees that had gone through the restructuring process. We also have the township, which is, I will touch on that a little bit later, but the township and assets and operations that will be transferred to the Richter Salt Municipality. the township is a very important part of Alex Corps at this point in time, because we are required to upgrade all the town, which is Alexander Bay, to municipal standards before we transfer it to the municipality and to the appropriate department. The next slide just really gives a snapshot of the approach that was used and how we looked at it. And you can see the land claim, the transformation, and consultation that took place during the process. And if you look in the middle of the slide, you'll see that you have new jobs created, and those were the ex-employees, and those are the new, and you have the new companies in farming. So obviously there were training and development needs for both of those, and then future training is necessitated for the PSJV. And then we have the social and labor plan, which is obviously something that we have. I'll touch on that a bit later on, but the social and labor plan plays an important part of Alex Corps' future. And it was key during this whole process to ensure that there was sufficient and adequate communication between the parties. The next slide looks at the original approach versus the final approach. And so on your left column, you'll see the farms. And there, in terms of the transfer, it was a 197 transfer. And the employees had to transfer to the new businesses, which with the same and similar conditions of service, or alternatively accept a generous voluntary separation package, and all employees but three accepted the VSP. And actually the majority of those that did accept the VSP, however, were re-employed by the new businesses. In terms of the mine, the retrenchment was carried out in terms of the 189 of the Labor Relations Act. The employees and unions were notified of the mine's intention to restructure and to downscale operations to care and maintenance until the PSJV would be operating. Section 189 consultation commenced in 2007. A generous voluntary separation package was offered to employees. However, due to the impact of the voluntary exit versus forced exit, it was jointly agreed with the unions that the VSP would be offered as an alternative to retrenchment. So if we look at the next slide, it covers what financial packages were offered to employees. The original offer was 2 weeks for every completed year of service, and the farms, as I mentioned earlier, on were to transfer in terms of 197, and the mine to undergo retrenchment in terms of 189. The offer changed to voluntary separation packages, VSPs, offers to farms only, and the mandate then changed to include the mine in the VSP. So VSPs were offered to both farm and mine. The retrenchment process was placed on hold with the principle that the retrenchment process would be resuscitated if there was insufficient interest in the VSP. Organized labor requested an improved offer of 3 weeks plus 10,000 rand as a relocation allowance. The Department of Public Enterprise mandated an integrated and holistic approach to the restructuring, and for the financial packages to be, they wanted us to actually reevaluate them. The aim was to develop a seamless transition plan post the conversion of the mining rights and the cession of the rights to the PSJV. Research was conducted on similar restructuring initiatives in the mining industry and in the region. The mining charter, the social and labor plan guidelines were used as a benchmark. The next slide talks about the organized labor's expectations. There were extensive consultations with labor during this process. The uniform VSP was offered to all employees, as the original intention of retrenchment had the unintended consequence of denying affected employees access to benefits such as UIF and tax reprieve. A distinction was drawn between the farm workers who had the safety of a job and the mine workers who did not. Organized labor requested that the retrenchment process in terms of Section 189 was to be resuscitated and completed to enable mine employees to claim their legitimate benefits to UIF and tax reprieve. The aim was to run the 189 consultation with the VSPs, Alternative to Retrenchment for ABM, alongside the voluntary separation packages of the ABT employees. The principles that governed the employees' final packages were that the packages needed to be socially conscious, and they needed to ensure that the poorest affected by the change were not compromised and were provided with an appropriate financial parachute. The value of the payment had to have meaning. Any form of discrimination had to be meaningful, logical, and consistent. Consideration of the profile of the affected individuals, age, length of service, and skills levels were taken into consideration. The reemployment prospects of affected employees were also taken into consideration, and the consideration of VSPs against other redress mechanisms. Consideration of whether the package was legally defensible. So if you look in the block at the end of this slide, it gives you the financial package formula that was used. So it was the benefits accrued, leave, and accumulated bonus contribution, the VSP, 2 weeks for every completed year of service, 80% of VSP value as an ex gratia payment, and a total payout minimum threshold of 20,000. And I think that was, we said the 20,000 would be the minimum because there were people that were actually going to be way below this level. The total cost of the VSP and benefits plus ex gratia was for a total of 16,918,000 plus another 11 million for a total of 28 million. The restructuring approach was phased. It was in two stages. Phase one was the immediate transfer and exit of the farm employees, and those were obviously transferred across to the new businesses, and the employees affected by the downscaling of the mining operations. So the mine moving to care and maintenance model, which meant to very, very little mining taking place on the land, and marine would continue, while still generating revenues to sustain operations and keep plants functioning. And I think this was a very important point. When I mentioned care and maintenance, although not much mining is taking place, we still actually have the plants running, and it's very important even before the joint venture happens and the community takes over the mining operations that everything does not fall into disrepair. Because if the plants are left not functioning, they would be in a very bad, if not functioning, state when they did the handover. The second phase was the exit of employees prior to the PSJV taking over operations. So if you just look at the last section, the financial package values were communicated and offered to all employees. The farm workers, 73 accepted the offer and 3 were transferred to the new companies. Many of the ex-employees were re-employed by the new farming company. In fact, the majority were re-employed. The mine workers, 40 employees accepted the voluntary separation packages as an alternative to retrenchment. 83 employees, volunteers required to avoid a forced retrenchment process. They were required because those posts were ring-fenced and they were needs for the company. And an additional 43 employees had to be forcibly retrenched using criteria that was agreed to and consulted on with the union. So it was a combination of LIFO, last in, first out, skills required and for the continued operation. The approach to the And now I'm going to speak a little bit about the social and labor plan, the approach to an integrated social transition plan. In terms of the mining charter requirements, Alex Corder is required to develop a social and labor plan that encompasses the following components: the development programs in consultation with local government and structures, and development programs obviously entail training, process to manage the downscaling of closure of the mining operations, and details that promote and ensure socio-economic development in the region. All of these would be, you know, would look at firstly minimizing the closure and downscaling, and obviously that, you know, once it we have gone through the process of seeing if we can actually minimize the downscaling, we would through consultations and forums identify, you know, what sort of numbers we were looking at. Minimizing closure on downscaling impact on individuals, the region, and the local economy. Again, to just talk further about the context of the restructuring, we had political obligations. The government, as an employer, was obliged to engage with provincial political structures, district and regional political structures. The region is economically weak and opportunities are limited, and there's a high dependency on mining in that area. So the high possibility of eventual poverty and dependency on the state was identified. The social challenges that we faced were needing to ensure that the employees were treated fairly, with financial packages that ease the burden, initiatives to assist and support employees during this transition, and we did offer, you know, there was a lot of not just counseling but also business development amongst other. But I'll go into that when we talk about the training that was offered. Assistance in seeking alternative employment and community outreach and development programs that aimed at driving economic sustainability. The impact it had on employees, the employees had the threat of restructuring for almost 10 years. So there had been a climate in the company of people sort of really losing hope and enthusiasm because there was always this restructuring thing looming. Employees and communities were fatigued and feeling dejected. The skills of existing staff was low and the earning potential was weak. We also had quite a large turnover of employees at Alex Corp. Just during this period of uncertainty, there were quite a number of people that actually left of their own accord. The employees that were affected by the restructuring fell into the following categories: the immediate employees who sought alternative employment post-exit from Alex Corp, and these were supported during the transition process through training and development programs. And those training and development programs were actually set up in such a way that either the person concerned could go through the training, or they could also have a proxy. So family members, if they were unable to attend the training, if they chose not to attend the training, they could send a family member. And then there was a placement assistance. So we had somebody who was focused solely on preparing CVs and looking at the skills for people to re-enter the new job market, and we established an office that has assisted the employees to do so, and we will be in the process of doing a follow-up to see where people are and where they have been placed. Medium-term employees in the mining operations who remained, these employees needed to be upskilled. So these are the people that remained in the company. They needed to be upskilled to improve their employability in the new mining venture. And then the long-term employees would also need to be upskilled or reskilled in order to secure alternative employment in the PSJV. The map on the next page gives a breakdown of where the employees from Alex Corp came from, so obviously where they would be going back to. Next, I will touch on the training and development interventions. There should be a number of number next to the term. Yeah, sorry, it's not very big, but wherever you see a number next to the town, then that should indicate how many employees came from that area. But unfortunately, the print is very small, but yeah, oh, that's clearer. Yeah, it's clearer up there. I think you can see that better. So there's Uppington 3, there's Springbok 5, Orchid, Port Knowles, Cardiff, Steinkopf. Bangkok has 50 employees from Bangkok. So those would be the main areas. The next slide looks at the training and development intervention. And on the left slide, we look at ABT, which is farming. The exiting employees were offered training and development programs to ensure improved employability and self-sufficiency. So there was training as well before people moved across to the new farming business. And there was also a post-care of about 3 months. So there was just following up to ensure that training was properly done and that people were actually well integrated into the new business for a period of 3 months. The transferring employees, training and development to upskill and ensure sustainability on the farms, and then the management, training and development on core management skills, coaching and mentorship, and also to enable access to regional and agricultural initiatives for the growth and sustainability of the business. So there was also quite a big focus on management training. On ABM, which is the mining part, the exiting employees were offered training and development programs to ensure improved employability and self-sufficiency. Post-care again here for 3 months. Housing post-care support was also extended to December 2008, and that meant that people were able to still, those that had families or children going to school, were actually able to stay in the houses until December. Maintenance and care operations, training and development to upskill and improve employability in the joint venture operations, and that would be the PSJV, and to facilitate and enable transition of the ex-employees into the JV. Well, and just to expand a little bit on the JV doesn't necessarily have any obligation to take all Alexco employees when they are established, but we have appealed to them to say, you know, that people are being... There is the possibility of even upskilling rather than looking for, new employees. The next slide is social and labor plans were drafted and submitted together. This is one of the conversions, the mining rights conversion requirements. And actually, two social and labor plans were submitted. We did an application for the conversion of the land mining rights and the marine mining rights. The training plan was considered in the social and labor plan, and we looked at the employee profiles. So we looked at those that were unskilled, semi-skilled, and skilled, looked at the cost and the regional accessibility to training institutions, and the viability in terms of timing. We also looked at leveraging the local and regional options and opportunities, so agriculture and tourism strategies, and we did a pre-training screening and assessment to ensure success. The training plan looked at the development in terms of employment opportunities, regional and district development opportunities, and a lot of consultation was done with the region to actually look at what the needs were. Social and economic development opportunities. The interventions leverage existing skills program and the learnerships that are available and affordable. So we looked at what was available and affordable. and the costings averaged on a per capita basis and were based on benchmark research estimates. In terms of the social and labor plan, AlexCorp has the responsibility to ensure that the proposed initiatives address immediate restructuring needs and longer-term restructuring requirements, and these included the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, the BEE Socioeconomic Empowerment Charter requirements, and that government will ensure compliance with the provisions of the charter and will be exemplary in the way in which it deals with the state assets. The mining operations, until the PSJV takes over, needed to do the following: to convert its new order mining rights, and the PSJV strategic imperatives would inform the mining plan, so the mining work program, the HR plan, and the social and labor plan. These are all submitted when we put in our application for the conversion. The initiatives would support and enhance the interim mining operations and the business needs of the PSJV. Just on that, the applications for conversion were submitted for the land in February this year. And even though we haven't been granted the mining rights as yet, which is a requirement for the establishment of the PSJV, we are beginning to look at ways of monitoring the progress that's been made. AlexCorp has provided support to post-transfer of the Richter Salt Agricultural Holding Company and ensured that employees who were transferred to the Agricultural Holding Company were sufficiently skilled to meet the needs of the new businesses. And we provided training and development programs to support the sustainability of the farming operations. We provided support to the management and HR team to ensure seamless transition. And the support we actually offered, the company provided support to once the farms had been transferred, in terms of we assisted them with their financials, their payroll, other HR support, and IT for quite a few months after the transfer had taken place. As I mentioned earlier on, the social and labor plans were put together and submitted to the Department of Mineral Resources with the mining applications, and there were two, both land and marine social plans. And the reason we did two social plans was actually on advice by the Department of Mineral Resources. They felt it was important to have a separate social plan for the marine and one for the land. The social and labor plans were done in consultation with the Interim Joint Board, which is the Interim Joint Board is a board that currently exists until the PSJV has established its board. And the reason we consulted with them is because the social and labor plan is actually going to be a plan that they will implement and not AlexCorp. So we didn't want to put together something that they don't actually feel party to, because they're going to have to agree. And it's committing them to a number of things, to local economic development, to training, and all the other requirements of the social and labor plan. AlexCorp is currently in the process of appointing a compliance officer to deal with the Department of Mineral Resources requirements. And this, again, as I said earlier on, we still haven't had the rights converted, but we feel that we need to start monitoring the process ourselves, even because within a year, there are certain promises that you make when you submit your social and labor plan, and we want to actually get things up and running so that we have somebody who's totally dedicated to this particular area. We will also be having stakeholder forums, and the stakeholders will include not just AlexCorp employees, but it will include people from the region, the community, municipality, and also we've actually also opened it up to some of the other mining companies in the area. The next slide talks about the stakeholder engagement. It was critical to the success of and the sustainability of these initiatives, both the restructuring and post-restructuring. the critical success factors of the community consultation and the union involvement was key. Skills were transferred to the members of the community for improved sustainability, and that was key to the approach adopted. Consideration was taken of the short-term and medium-term social and economic impact, and the long-term sustainability was driven by integration with the needs of the emerging joint venture and the alignment with personnel and operational needs. The mining license conversion application and integration with the social and labor plan, that is in process, and they've been submitted, but it's in process in terms of the implementation. And the integration at all times was we've been trying to ensure that there was integration and with the IDPs, the integrated development plans of the region. The creation of municipal and local government links and alignments to development plans was also undertaken. Alex Kaur, with the support of public enterprise, has engaged with the following stakeholders: provincial government, local government, the relevant national government departments, DME, today's DMR. DPE and Alex Kaur intend to ensure the ongoing access to these opportunities at a regional level, so we would be talking to departments like housing and agriculture and other. And the human resource development aspect is actually, it has been obviously critical in this whole process. An exercise was conducted to identify the portable skills which were in demand in the local and provincial economies. Service providers for the region were identified to provide such skills training. In the case of surplus training, the offer of training was extended to the community. So where we had courses that were not filled by Alexco employees, we actually opened them up to other community members that weren't necessarily Alexco employees. Training was provided to 144 persons in the various programs, and the mining-related training initiatives implemented during the year were focused on safety training, first aid training, rigging training, and hyperbaric chamber operating training. Alexco has continued to support three bursars at tertiary institutions during 2009, and these are in finance, mining, and geology. So to continue with the HRD, the impending implementation of the PSJV has prevented the development of extensive career paths at Alexco and of mentorship programs. We've had to limit those because our understanding was the PSJV would actually be up and running this year. Such initiatives were subject to clarity on the implementation of the PSJV. So short-term career paths and mentorship initiatives have been implemented where possible. The next slide talks about mine community development. The major development initiatives of the social and labor plan is the upgrade of Alexander Bay Town infrastructure to that of municipal standards, and in preparation of the transfer of the town to the Richtersveld District Municipality. So that's actually a very, it's quite a complex process doing the upgrade, because we actually have a lot of these, we have schools, we have houses, and over 400 and something houses. And all these houses were all previously on Alexco's system in terms of electricity supply. So we're having to look at rewiring the houses so that they're all individually rewired, and the sewage systems, the roads. It's quite a number of areas that we are looking at for the upgrade of the town. The major elements of the works program are the upgrade, as I mentioned, of water, sewer systems, and electrical reticulation, and the relocation of wastewater treatment works. An amount of $80 million has been allocated to this project, and the project is expected to cost 160 16 million. It will take about 2 years to complete, and it will commence in January 2010. All the efforts have been made to support the participation of HDSA companies during this upgrade process. And although no, actually the SMEs and labor-intensive constructions where possible, I mean a lot of it is actually not too labor-intensive, but where we can, we will certainly we will promote the. It's part of the tender criteria will be employing local labor, and people will also benefit from training. So we will be using unskilled. Skilled have to take 100% of unskilled labor has to be procured locally, and a large percentage of skilled. So there will be, you know, I think that will actually be not a huge job creation project, but it certainly will have some impact on the area. The hostel accommodation for Alexco employees has been phased out, and this again is one of the requirements of the social and labor plan. The current employees are now housed in single unit accommodation. And Alexco continues to ensure that the nutritional needs are being met. And we've come to the end of the presentation. I'm happy to take questions. My team will come in with.
To the presentation from Alex, and I think it's a worrying, but let's I've noted Honorable Siban, Honorable Sibir. Before Honorable Siban starts. If you can clarify from page 28. You know, DPE and Alexco. I'm happy DPE is here. DPE and Alexco intend to ensure ongoing access to opportunities. Is still intending to ensure. You know, you are still, you know. From this page 28. It's not really clear. You know, it's like a history, a story that you are telling us. In this period where we are going to create jobs, and jobs are being like phased out. People are being retrenched. And if you can clarify this from page 28 to page. But if you can just elaborate more what you mean by what you're saying on. And like also the training was provided to 144 persons in various programs. Are those people are now working, or what is happening? After they have been trained, what is happening to them? And then Honorable Sibande, you can note down your questions, and then you will respond. Also, let's say, also on page 20, slide number 20, the 43 employees who were retrenched, maybe say how many have found alternate employment, and then how many employees remain with Alexco Bay Mining after the 43 replacement. Then slide number 29. Okay, I think I've asked that one day. Fine. Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is not so long ago, but there are only few issues maybe whereby I would request for clarification. Number one. If maybe you can clarify us on page 13, you spoke about the issue of the issue of system of mining charter. in our financial package whereby there are a lot of agreements which took place. My question is that you indicated that the minimum was 20,000. If the minimum was 20,000, to me, that means maybe, if you can clarify us on that one, maybe you were paying the people the same amount across the board. Because I can't understand what criteria was used in order to reach the minimum. And also, you got a lot of statistics which indicated that people, the money which was spent is more than 16 million. Maybe if you can clarify it on that one. Why I'm raising that thing? On page 19, if people were paid the sources, yeah, you indicated that on page 19 that employees and community were fatigued and feeling dejected. How can I feel dejected while I was paid so much money? To me, it raised eyebrows. And then also, in your memorandum of understanding, which was signed between DPE, DBSA, and some of the communities, I mean structures, steering committee, all the same, you indicated it was indicated that Alesco was tasked with the preparation or will be preparing a report on all work undertaken to date, including infrastructure design and cost, survey and status of the township application. Could you please maybe clarify us whether how far are you with that arrangement, because you committed yourself during the process while you're signing the memorandum of understanding that everything is in order. And then lastly, if maybe, you see, there is a tendency in South Africa whereby most of the time local people in a certain locality are not taken on board. They're not. Because, I'll put an example. Somewhere you indicated that a lot of people were unskilled. Yes, if you can clarify, if it's that so, may you please clarify as that how many people were taken on board in terms of your structures? I mean, directly taken on board. To be called, maybe people taken to be on a board members, if you do have board members, whatever. Because most of the time, what is happening, some companies, when they come in a certain place, they underestimate the integrity of the local people in that particular area. They're not taken on board. That's why, to an extent, they feel dejected, because they feel that they are not considered as human beings. Thank you.
Yes, sir. See, I've got a couple of questions, and the first thing I deal absolutely with the previous speaker is that the allowance or package you give to the people of 20,000, the minimum of 20,000. If you can explain it a bit more to us and inform us exactly how it was, how do you get on the 20,000 minimum package for the people? And then I visit these places twice in my life, and I know it's very rural, and along the coast, on the west coast, there's a lot of mining activities if you're on the road. I want to know, what type of agriculture activities are in these areas? Is it sheep or of course, I haven't seen any farming activities really on the west coast, so if you can inform us a bit more about that. And then the main thing what worries me, and that is in all over South Africa where we found mines, the rehabilitation process. A lot of these mines, just when they finished with mining in a certain place, they just leave a lot of things there, and it is damage the whole environment in that area. So I want to know the rehabilitation on your minds. What are you doing, and who is the responsible person up to the end when it is finished?
Then you've said that that is on page 7 of slide 7. The mine activities was not really profitable. So I want to know, if it's not profitable, why is the action going on mining in certain areas, especially where this, you lay this, a lot of people off now from mining activities. So I want to know, if it's carrying on and it's not profitable, what is the reason the mine is still there? Yes, and then on slide 14, I just want to know there, you say farm workers who have the safety of jobs if they did not take up the offer. So I want to know, that's farming. If they've got a safety of jobs, is this job sustainable? Because, as I said, I can't see any farming in these areas, and I want to know if it's sustainable and profitable. So people must live on that farms, and they must make a life there. So how profitable is this type of farming in these areas? I nearby finish the chair. The most of South Africa's activities is in the eastern side of our country. So all the development is taking place more on the eastern side. Now, I want to know from your company, what are you going to do to get more investment in the western side of South Africa, and especially here on the coastline and where all your activities is on? What are you going to get more people there and get more jobs at? As we listened to our state president in the beginning of this term, he said we must create jobs for our people. And I want to know, what are you going to do to get people more jobs in this western side of South Africa? Thank you.
Sir President, thank you very much. I think, first of all, we need to appreciate the presentation. Give us a broader perspective of this project. Hence, you know, we're looking for best practices in the country. The one issue, Chairperson, is that the presenter indicated that the mining operations will be handed over to the community, but it's vague. It's in the air. There's no time frame. It can be for another 30 years when that operation is still in the hands of the company. The follow up question is that, in terms of, because emphasis is a lot on training, but you don't need to hear about training at the transfer of skills at the level of managerial, transfer of skills at the level of technical skills to run the mine. When the company retreat from the operation. The other issue, it's you know, in the mining sector, that the major crisis now presently is the safety of the workers on the mine. And in your presentation, it was basically just one sentence referring to safety of the mines, of the workers on the mine. We want to know that if there is a lot of research in to become proactive to secure the lives of our citizens on that mine. The other one question is really about infrastructure development. As the presenter refers to that, present to us that it seems to me there is bulk infrastructure there. There is bulk water supply, there is bulk electricity to the whole mine. And now they want to scale it down to where people live. We also must note, actually appreciate the fact that you start with a process of taking our people from hostile environment, but to units, to create some privacy for them, I think, and we need to applaud you on that one. But the critical one is that, you know, the government is also battling with infrastructure development. So when we can keep the private sector also accountable to invest back or contribute towards infrastructure development, it might assist us. Hence, your project is going to outgrow from January next year. So what is the company going to do? Because I also noted in the presentation that it speaks about you budgeted 80 million rand, but you're going to need 116 million rand. Hence, the claim on its own, they're speaking about 200 million rand for it. Is the money going to come from somewhere there, or it is something which is still in the future? Outstanding. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, just the last question, it is very short. And that is regarding the water resource. You know, in South Africa, we've got a problem with water. So what are you doing with water resource, and where are you getting your water from? That is, thank you.
Okay, all right. When you respond to the 144 members of the community who were selected, tell us what were the demographics in terms of gender consideration?
Point in the order of, I mean, I've noted the question, just if that's okay. On the 114 that received training, I'd just like to say that I think the question was how many people are still with the company. There are 111 people employed at AlexCorp. So some of the training would be sort of upskilling those people in those particular posts. But what we tried to do was we had a structure where we had the posts and then we filled them with the people. So there would be some upskilling that was necessary in that process, but 111 remained with the company. And of those 111, part of them are employed, you know, at the plant, and we've got people in the workshops. We've got a huge part of it is actually I'm sorry I didn't mention it in the presentation, but on health and safety, it actually is quite a critical part of our. And this year there's been a huge focus on health and safety in the company. We've actually started upskilling somebody. We have an officer that is now appointed solely to health and safety, and that's looking at taking our best practices from the Marine, where we had quite a good health and safety department, into the land. So there has been. There was an audit by the Department of Mineral Resources recently, and they didn't seem to have picked up any problems. I think we're on the safety side. We actually, in the last quarter, we haven't even had one reportable injury. No fatalities in the last year. There's been really a move to try and ensure that safety is on the top of the list. I know there's something, Jeff, you might want to mention.
Yes, just to add that our push on safety, over the last 5 years, the number of reportable accidents we've had has gone down from 42. It's gone down each year, and last year it was 10. So right now we've got a big push on to getting it even below 10. So, and when you consider the higher risk associated with, we've got over 300 divers diving off the coast of AlexCorp, you can imagine that's an elevated risk. So that sort of reportable numbers is a good safety record. But we definitely big push to improve it even further.
Just on the gender issue, John, the gender, I don't have the exact numbers, but I can say that in the last year we've actually improved our the women in across the organization. I think we have actually about, I think it's 60% not 60% PDSA, right? HDSA.
You send that to
okay, well, yeah, I'll send a breakdown of that. We don't have too many women in the managerial positions, and I mean that's something that we need to work on. But I'll send a breakdown of the numbers of gender.
Vacant posts? Do you have vacant posts?
We don't have vacant posts really, and you know I think this is what maybe didn't come out very clearly in the presentation is that. We're sort of in a bit of a transition period, and we're not functioning like a normal company would be functioning, where we'd be actually looking at scaling up and filling posts. I mean, we're creating the post of the person who's going to be doing monitoring and compliance, because I think that's critical, because it actually covers all of these areas. But we actually can't really go out and start employing new people at the moment because of this. The joint venture that's meant to be established, and I think you know we didn't. One of the questions was what are the time frames? We've submitted. One of the requirements was that we submit the applications for conversion, and that those are some of the suspensive conditions for the establishment of the joint venture. So those will be transferred to the community. But the conversion could take. We submitted the land mining rights in February. We're trying to see if they can't be fast tracked, and we're really trying to get as much assistance. We've been in discussions for constantly with the Department of Mineral Resources, and they said it could take up to 8 months. So 8 months from February. But that's not the only factor that, and I think maybe you know DPE might also want to sort of mention something about the establishment of the.
Chairperson, I think just to give a bit of context around the JV, I think it's also important to go back to the land claim and what came out of there. The land claim, the Richardsfield land claim was first lodged in 1998, and that process went right up to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court ruled that the community had a right to the mine and mineral resources on that land, apart from just the land. However, in that process, in terms of the Land Restitution Act, there was no mechanism of giving ownership of the mineral rights to the community because of the promulgation of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act. This act required that for a party to take on the mining rights, they have to have the technical competence to actually mine the resource as well as the financial capability to mine it. So this whole joint venture was actually created to enable the transfer of those mining rights to the community, because then in that case the land is all going to everything on the land is all going to the community. It will be community land. The land mining rights, once they are converted, are going to be owned by the community. Alexco will not own anything, the land mining rights. But to enable that transfer, there has to be Alexco as a mining company. Well, they've been mining for a long time, so they bring in the technical expertise, you know, to put it into this joint venture. And then it can be demonstrated that the community have a partner who can actually do the mining. So the Minister of Mineral Resources now can then transfer those mining rights to the Richardsfield Mining Company. So that's just some of the background to why in the end there was this joint venture, but.
if it wasn't for those technicalities, there wouldn't have been any need of a joint venture. Alexco would have just transferred the land mining rights to the community and remained with their marine rights, and the community would have gone on their own to start their own mining operation. I just thought I might give some context to that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm going to answer the question in maybe not in the right order, but one of the questions was regarding the impact on the employees, and this was on slide 19, about why the employees and community were so fatigued by this process. It's actually been, because the restructuring has been something that has been on the table for years. I mean, it was initiated. About 2 years ago. This restructuring process that's looming, and people were obviously feeling very insecure and not knowing what their future was. And I think some people actually found when the restructuring process started, they were almost sort of happy to at least get some sort of finality, because they didn't know whether those that were going to stay on, even some that stayed on. I mean, I think the morale is not very high at the moment, and the reason being because they don't know, once the joint venture is established, whether they're necessarily going to be employed. So I think it's just been because it's been something that's been looming for a long time, and that's created. They're not necessarily that they were indespondent or that they were unhappy because of the packages that were paid. It was actually really just this uncertainty that went on for a long time. And then I think there was another question regarding the MOU. And the township establishment, in terms of what is the agreement, and what are Alexco's obligations? Alexco is now running with the process of the township establishment. We have got DBSA on board, and another engineering firm. We will start the tendering process. The tenders and adverts will go out on the 25th of September. We were just, Alexco's board has been meeting to discuss the criteria and to ensure that the criteria is, along the right lines for ensuring that the companies are empowered, and that there's local employees, so that they will actually source the majority of employees from around the area. So it's just a question of finalizing that criteria, but on the 25th, the tenders will be advertised, and the actual construction of the first phase should start in January 2010, and will be completed in June 2011. The whole process, the handover to the Richtersveld community. So, I mean, quite a lot of work has been done. There actually was a plan that was signed off by the municipality, the plan for the upgrade, but we felt that the sustainability of that report was not taken into account, so we felt that we needed to bring DBSA in to look at it and just get some direction back then. Then I just think maybe our financial director Danny can just take us through the packages and how the 20,000 and how we arrived at that.
The packages that was the VHP packages that was granted was 2 weeks for every year completed service, and then an ex gratia amount of 80% of that 2 weeks of the VHP amount displayed out. So the 20,000 was set as a sub minimum for especially the farm workers that maybe was appointed very recently, that only had a year or 2 years service, and thus would only get about 2 months of their salary out. And that's why we said now we'll give a sub minimum of 20,000 to ensure that everybody gets at least 20,000. There was no rationale behind it. My justice was being 10,000 or 50,000. 20,000 was what was affordable at that stage. So yes, that's how we got to the sub-minimum, and yes, we did pay out almost 16 million rand in these fees the previous year.
And then there was a question regarding the farming and what is farmed in that area. There is a little bit of farming on the west coast. There's goat farming, and around Alexander Bay, the farms that we transferred are dairy farms, ostrich farms, and citrus farms. The problem facing those. The farming in that area will be, and you know, you asked about the sustainability, is that the distance to the markets is quite a huge distance to the markets. And previously those farms had been set up by the mine itself, because they were actually, you know, the mine was much bigger then, and the market was really the mine or some of the surrounding mines. But, you know, as you're aware, now these farms are transferred to the community. The mine, there isn't too much happening. I mean, you know, we have 111 employees on the mine now. So, they are contractors as well. So, but it's obviously not, the market is not big. They can't rely solely on that market at the moment, because even the neighboring mines, a lot of them have actually scaled down. We've got De Beers and Transex. So, they would have to be looking at markets. You know, much further than they had previously done. The other question was on the rehabilitation. We currently, just last year, we submitted the amendment for our EMP, Environmental Management Plan, to the Department of Mineral Resources. There are huge liabilities in that area, and we have been putting away about almost 2 million a month for provisions, and we probably have been over providing, but given the historical liabilities in that area, we felt we needed to do that. We have projects. Environmental project. We are currently looking at revegetation in the area, and we've actually involved the local communities that are working on some of those projects for us. The liability is huge, and the idea is that we are not going to just move this liability onto the PSJV, onto the community, that they will only be responsible for rehabilitating once they start the mining for any new disturbances, if you want, caused to the land. I don't know if that response answers the question on the rehab. There was also a question on the PSJV. I think Anthony from DPE has sort of answered that about when the handover will take place and a bit of background there. In terms of the transfer of managerial skills to at Alex Corps, we haven't done in the last year. There hasn't been too much. Apart from there's been a focus on health and safety. There's been quite a lot of training there, and I spoke about the bursaries. But our HRD has been quite limited to what we think the PSJV might need, and we have consulted with them on occasions. Where we're doing training to say, if we're training somebody, will you be able to take this person on, even if we said put people through extensive training. So we've been a bit, and things have been a bit difficult for us to just do our normal HRD for the year. Jeff, I don't know if you want to mention something about the training.
What I can say as far as training management and mentorship is concerned, we actually have a program going. One of our bursars graduated at the beginning of the year, and that person is currently going around the departments and being given the exposure to actually take over as the financial accountant. She's a local girl as well, female, noted. And in addition, we have one of our graduate engineers. He graduated at the end of 07, beginning of 08, and he is also going through the various departments. He's actually running the rehab side at the moment, so he can take over as engineering manager. And he's also a local chap. Unfortunately, our geologist left us, also a lady. She got married. And we also have a local chap who is being groomed to take over as the marine manager. So as far as our management's concerned, we've got an active program in place there.
Okay. Another question was, I think I've responded to the safety question, was infrastructure development, what has been done. And again, there we've spoken about the township establishment, which looks at the water, electrification, and it actually isn't, it's not, it's actually the contrary of scaling down. What it is, it's upgrading, upgrading whatever structures we have. So we won't, to hand them over to the municipality, they have to be at municipal standards. So that it's going to, so that's actually going to, I mean, it's definitely going to make things function in a much better way, and not on the dependence of the mine that it was done in the past, but it'll function like a proper municipality. So it's actually an upgrade, not a downgrade. Another question was around the water. We actually, Alexco actually supplies water to the neighboring town, Port Nolans. Alexco has been not only supplies water to the mine, but also to the surrounding town. Yeah, it's from the Orange River. I think I've covered everything. I hope I have. If there's anything else, I'd be glad to.
And then follow up?
Sorry, there was a question around what are we doing to look at investments in the area. In terms of our social and labor plan, we've looked at what the IDPs, the local IDPs are, and what are the needs regionally in terms of our social and labor plan commitments. And I think this 80 billion that is going to the township establishment is a substantial. It might not be bringing foreign investments, but I think it's seen as quite a sizable intervention in the area. And we would also be engaging with other mining companies that are in that area to see where we can, you know, we can jointly look at projects. But I mean, we tend to sort of. We've tended to want to go do the projects that we have got, the infrastructure development projects. They're quite big. I mean, you're talking about electrification, you're talking about sewage, you're upgrading the roads. I think it's quite substantial. But one of the projects that we could be looking at with more interest would be the agriculture. But the agriculture is now sitting with the community. So if it becomes one of our community development projects, it would be over and above what we've actually included in our social and labor plan.
No, thank you very much. And of course, thank Ms. Katie for the responses that she has given. Questions as put. I think maybe we need to, you know, I'm just looking at this thing in retrospect, and I say to myself, but Alesco has been very responsible in the first place as a public company. To have just dragged this whole thing in terms of the land links and people. I mean, I've got my own views on that particular matter. And I see some elements coming back, Chairperson. If you look at the presentation as given. Because for obvious reasons, Alesco and the DP, you were together, partners in strategic partners in contesting the claim by the Rakhtar's community. So they are very much strategic partners, Chair. Now, I see a continuation here, one, and I stand to be corrected. The department and ALESCO says, what we are going to do is to ensure that at the end of the day, all these mining, particularly land mining rights, are transferred to the people or to the community. But you don't give us a structure of this community. Who in particular is going to receive the land on behalf of the community? Is there a structure? Is there a CPA? Or, you know, what form of organization has been put in place to ensure that you don't have a situation, as mentioned by the Honorable Pat, on people then being further isolated from the proceeds of this handover? Because we are seated with this kind of a situation throughout the country, not only in the Rakhtar's Veld, where you find that where land is being transferred to the people, there is then the emergence of an elite that presents itself as the representative of the people, only to find that they in actual fact act in isolating or further marginalizing the actual beneficiary. So I think that explanation is quite important in terms of the structure now. It's going to work out. Linked to that is the question of why is ALESCO still going to own 51%? Why is the community not being given the 51% in terms of the structure of that agreement? I mean, I would have loved to see that. It might be an ideological question, it might be a theoretical question. But I mean, to me, it would have been more of an expression of saying, yes, we are committed to transferring this economic entity, or we are for community development. Therefore, we are going to give this community 51% and we'll hold unto the 49%. And as a former state-funded institution, we are plowing back now into this community. We take the 49%, but still continue with the rent or extension of our skills, because we've got the technical know-how of mining and all those sorts of things. I would be quite impressed if I can hear why the ALESCO is not giving the community the majority shareholding, and they take the minority shareholding through that variance of that percentage that you have. And then lastly, Chair, I just want to re-emphasize this thing. Not to re-emphasize, but to ask the question, what is the structure of, because the presentation speaks about black economic empowerment, but the presentation doesn't go much into detail to tell us exactly how is this black economic empowerment structured. Where are your young people located in this whole situation? And what is it that these young people are going over and above the scheme of upskilling, skilling, training, and blah, blah, blah? But real, real involvement and beneficiation of young people, of women in that particular area, and so forth and so forth. All those sectoral aspects that are there. I would find it quite interesting. So that 5 years down the line, we must then be able, before the end of this term of parliament, say again, we need to make an assessment of the briefing that we are given by Oskettin to this committee. To say, on the 17th or the 16th of September 2009, this is what we were told. How far have we gone? Did we achieve? What are the outcomes of this whole kind of thing? Or is ALESCO saying, hey man, schedule is, or this is our theme. We want to hang on to it as long as we can. And what is the role of the department? Is the department also saying, no, that's not our baby? Yes, of course. Because one of the debates that we're having, and I'll tell you, Chair, I'm sorry to be so long, but I'm raising this thing precisely because of the contemporary debate now in the country around state-owned enterprises or public companies established by the state to play a particular role in terms of their direction, how they structure themselves to respond to the developmental needs of our country, to respond to the issues of unemployment, to respond to the issues of skin diseases and so forth and so forth, and fighting poverty in the main. And I can't get it. But if I can't get it, maybe you might be able to tell me, no, Mr. Tao, you missed it here. Here is the issue. We might not have chance at it. Thank you.
Yeah, Buma. Ngiyabonga. Mama Maseko. There was a question which I've asked, and I don't think that it was responded to accordingly, about the issue of the involvement of the local people in our structure, not as co-partners. And then again, Chairperson, I wanted to raise a serious concern about in some of this response, in terms of the things which were transferred from Alesco to the people, which includes fruits, ostrich, dairy, and oysters to the people. Of which I was triggered by the Honourable Member Groenewald about the issue of the area which was used as a mine. As a mind some time ago, that after then, what is the role of the particular people there? But coming back to this thing, in her response, was that it now too far from these farmers to the market? To me, it made me to have a very serious concern. That means you have that, I just identify, I don't know which language can I use, the things which are not useful, and give it to the people so that they can see themselves how they feel about it. Because if it was useful, they wouldn't transfer it to the people. Why suddenly, after being transferred to the people, now it's becoming very far to the market? So that's my concern. Because I would be very much grateful when we leave here, maybe to send some breakdowns about these farms, that how the size and et cetera, of the fruits, size of the fruits of the farms and dairy and the like, so that we can maybe, when we intend, because it will push us maybe to make an oversight visit. But is it really? Because to me, to the presentation, it's just a gloomy picture, as if people are surviving, we have we are sharing with them, we gave them this. At the end, similar question when we ask, no, people, they can't afford to go to the market. It makes me to be very much suspicious over this issue. And then also the thing which was raised by Mr. Funeva, that how do we deal about the old mines on the place where the people were doing mining. From my own little experience, most of the place I know is coincidental. I was never been there personally at this juncture. But most of the places where people were doing mining, very few companies which are making follow-ups in terms of environment, looking in terms of environment and cleaning in that particular area. Because some of them, I'll put an example, if you're digging, some of the water which are from underground, they're having a bad smelling, and then they are healthy hazards to the birds and the environment, of which is very serious in terms of environment in that particular area. And the soil, which is from underground, is not the same as the recent soil. If you come very close, if you're in the distance, yes, it's, everything is normal. But if you go there, sometimes if you plant, nothing will come out.
I just want to take further the debate which was raised by Honorable Tau on the issue of shareholding, whereby Alex is getting 51%, the committee is getting 49%. I think it's a bad agreement if that agreement was made, because I think the people who should benefit should be in the majority. I even think Alex should maybe have been given 10%, not 51% and 49%. I think they still want to cling to the monopoly. Because the other issue that has been raised here, it has been said this business is no longer profitable. Does it mean it is no longer profitable when it was successfully claimed by the community of Rechtefeld? Earlier, when it was not owned by the people, it was profitable. Now, when it has to be handed over to people, it's no longer profitable. I think I'm not comfortable with that, because it's quite clear when it's handed over to these people, it's no longer to be profitable. And there is no profit that these people are going to get. So it will be just a white elephant. So maybe if we could get clarity on that. And also they said the workforce was reduced from 276 to 111. What happened to that workforce that was reduced? Because I did not see it here or in the presentation. Thanks.
Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know, I think my main reason why I'm asking about the water resources, about the main activities. Mining activities is make use of a lot of water. So that's why I want to know, but you do not answer it. And then I also want to know, you mentioned that your workforce is 111, and the gentleman there said that you've had over 300 divers. So is it part of the workforce, or how is it working? Thank you.
Department, do you want to come in first before the responses? Because members, let me share with you that actually when the land was transferred, the land claim was given to the people of Rechtefeld, the community, I was there. The Department of Public Enterprises was there. There was a big thing. You know, the people were so happy. Very, very happy. Yeah, very happy. Yes. And then now, if you hear of what is happening now, it means that, you know, it's like giving somebody a small child a seat, and then you take it away from that person instead of assisting. You know, it's really heartbreaking. That's why I said last time, We must go there to go and do oversight and see and talk to the people also to understand how are they feeling of the whole process. Because definitely sitting here with Alexco, listening to Alexco telling us this is 1, 2, 3, but we must also hear from the people what are they feeling. Department, and then Alexco will respond.
Okay. Chairperson, I just want to deal with the issues around the land claim, and just to give elaborate on the structure of the community, and then probably I'll touch on the profitability issues historically. In terms of the Land Restitution Act, a land claim is brought against the state. So Alexco just happened to be the land owner upon which it could happen with any farm owner where a land claim is brought. But effectively, the claim was brought against the state as represented by the Land Claims Commission. And that process went through the courts. And then when the Constitutional Court ruled in the community's favor, I think at all times the courts ruled in one party's favor, and at the next stage it would rule in the other party's favor. But the Constitutional Court then ruled in the community's favor. And then the Constitutional Court referred the matter back to the Land Claims Court to determine the nature of the restitution package to the community. And it's after that the Department of Public Enterprises got involved in the negotiations to get to a restitution package to put to the Land Claims Court. In terms of the structure of the community, actually, through the whole claim process, what needed to be satisfied first was that it was actually a legitimately constituted community, and the Land Claims Commission has satisfied that it's a duly registered community property association, a CPA. And then in terms of the court order, I think the Land Claims Court went a lot in ensuring what the Honorable Member referred to. Sometimes you find that, yes, a land restitution has been done, and then just a certain grouping within that community seemed to be benefiting from the whole thing. So if you look at the court order that the Land Claims Court gave, it protected all the community structures. The Rhys-Swell community is set up first at the top. It's the CPA, and there's a community trust. And within from that community trust, there are other entities, an investment trust, to which the money that was paid by the state as reparation was going to go to. It's an independent trust with directors some of them appointed from the respective towns of in the Rhys-Swell, and then some independent directors on that investment trust. And then there are two state representatives who serve as directors. One is representing National Treasury, and the other one representing Land Affairs, just to ensure that whatever investment decisions that are taken are for the benefit of the greater community rather than just certain people. And then there's a peripheral of companies like the Rhys-Swell Mining Company, the Rhys-Swell Property Holding Company, there's the Rhys-Swell Rehabilitation Company, and the Rhys-Swell Agriculture Holding Company, to which those agriculture and mining assets that previously were owned by Alex Cole were transferred. The Rhys-Swell Mining Company will take transfer of the mining rights once they are converted by the land mining rights, but once they are converted by Alex Cole. So overall, that's the kind of structure that we're talking about. And in the court order, I think there were certain thresholds that were inserted for any community decisions. It had to be put to a general meeting in the community for them to undertake any particular, you know, transaction that was deemed material. So I think the court order got into a lot of details in terms of ensuring that there's broader participation in the decision making in relation to what was awarded to the community. Just going back to the issue of the PSJV, the land mining and all that land will be the community 100%. All Alex Gore has remained with after that transfer is the marine mining rights and that infrastructure. So the hope. Are we a partner? Yes, but in terms of the claim was on the land. The claim was on the land, and even the Constitutional Court ruled that yes, the community had the right to the land, plus the mineral resources on the land, and that all has been given to the community. So all Alex Gore has remained with are the offshore mining concessions. Otherwise, the all the land has been given to the community. And even in terms of the land, it's not only Alex Gore land that has gone to the community. There's some provincial land that has been transferred to the community, and there's some state land that has been transferred to the community. I can confirm that those transfers have been done the way the Office of the State Attorney was doing the conveyancing and transfer. And all those pieces of land have now been formally transferred to the community. So effectively, Alex Gore only remains with the marine mining rights. And these are the rights that they are contributing into the joint venture to constitute this joint venture, which would basically be a vehicle. It's an interim measure, effectively, to bring into effect that transfer of the mining rights to satisfy the requirements of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act. It provides for that PSJV can have a very short life after the transfer is done. The community can decide they want to get their own mining partner, and they can do that. It's contained in that. It provides for an interim period of 5 years, and the community at any point can decide, Alex, go on with your own stuff. We've got our own mining rights. We've identified a mining partner who is competent to undertake the mining, and they can do that. They have that right. So the JV was basically formed to bring into effect that transfer of the mining rights to the community. Because otherwise, in terms of the Act, the MPRDA, there would have been difficulty in effecting that, satisfying the requirements thereof. Then just in terms of the profitability, I think this land claim went on for more than 10 years. It was first lodged in 1998. And yes, Alex Gore did exhibit some profitability in the earlier years, but there was the land claim created a lot of uncertainty. They couldn't mine certain areas because the community would interdict that. So even their whole mining operation over that period was constrained. The community would interdict. There's a place called Muislak on the land side. Alex Gore wanted to do some exploration work there and do some mining operations there. There was an interdict. So That's the kind of environment that Alex Gore then started operating in. And that whole uncertainty and the lack of exploration then made mining operation and profitability a bit difficult. So I think just to give you some perspective on the profitability of the company. There will need to be extensive exploration to identify a proper reserve. The resource is there, but obviously, if you're going to do proper mining, you need a proper exploration program, and that is something that the interim joint board of the of the upcoming JV have been looking at, basically looking at mineral resources on both the land and the sea.
Yes, to respond to the question of the 276 persons that were retrenched, and you know, where are those people? They have all left Alexander Bay except for six people that are still in their houses. And there was another question around the 111 employees at AlexCor and the contractors. AlexCor is not, as I mentioned earlier on, they don't have their own mining teams, land mining teams as they used to have. I mean, in the past they operated with contractors on the marine side, and they had their own mining teams on the land. Now there are three contractors. We actually reduced the land mining teams completely due to the establishment of the PSJV, and also just the lack of funds that, you know, for the business to be recapitalized. So there are 350 something contractors in total, and that's land and marine. 73 are on the land, and the rest is 73.
On the marine.
So that's the breakdown of the contractors. And the other question was, what involvement do we have of local people in AlexCor structure? I think what would probably be more useful, if we actually send a breakdown, we can send you the breakdown so you can understand how many women and what, you know, local participation and so on. I think it would be easier than us trying to construct that now. So I'll be glad to email you that as just part of an extra slide of the presentation. The other question was around the shareholding, which Anthony has answered. And I just think, I mean, just again to add on that, I mean, obviously it was not AlexCor's decision for the split in equity. I mean, I think, you know, Anthony's given a bit of context. And I mean, it was something that we have to carry out now from the deed of settlement, but you know, it wasn't something that we decided as a company we're going to keep 51% and give the community 49%. It's something that we just now have to implement. The other question was regarding the farms, and I think it's important, you know, to say, I mean, I want, you know, that it's the question about being far from markets and so on. I mean, I don't think that's really the main market for the farms was actually AlexCor, when AlexCor owned the farms. The dairy farm, one of the dairy farms has since closed down, and the citrus farm is closed down. It's, you know, so unfortunately, if one goes out there and sees, this December they were still up and running, and since in the last couple of months, yeah, they've closed down. So you just have the ostrich farm, and the dairy is not functioning. And yeah, the oyster farm is actually working quite well. They are actually bringing their oysters go to Nisner. So what they do is they cultivate their oysters till they're a certain size, and then they send them off. So they have quite a good arrangement going in terms of a market for the oysters. And then, Jeff, I don't know if you want to just speak about, is it economical to mine? I think you want to just
Yes, I think Anthony from DPE has actually answered that one. It was on the profitability of AlexCor and why is it continuing. And Anthony has explained that because of the negotiations over the land claim, we couldn't mine in certain areas. And in addition, because this land claim case has been going on since 96, when I think it was initially lodged, AlexCor hasn't had access to very much funding from government. So our earth-moving fleet is the same earth-moving fleet that we had in 1996. And normally a mining company would probably scrap its earth-moving fleet after 5 years. And we've been pushing with this one for nearly 15 now.
So I'm sure you understand at some stage the costs of that Earth moving fleet are going to be much higher than a normal one. And that's what one of the things that has resulted in Alex Corps being unprofitable recently.
Chairperson, I think this also, I think it's important to also talk about the whole MOU between DBSA and DBE with regard to the township infrastructure. I just wanted to clarify a few things there. The infrastructure plans were initially done, but we considering the DBSA's expertise in township development with their Sienza Manje program, and they have experts in that particular field. Alex Cole, they're miners. Yeah, so township development is not their core mandate. We just thought we might partner with the DBSA so that they bring in that actual township establishment expertise. They have provided technical expertise to the project. They've committed an engineer and a town planner, just to ensure that even as the engineers upgrade this infrastructure, it's actually complying to minimum municipality standards. And then one concern that came up when the DBSA was first brought on, they looked at the infrastructure designs. And you see, already they were working with the Richtersveld municipality, and they stayed right there and said, we need to review some of this infrastructure. When the Richtersveld municipality takes over this infrastructure, it will be too expensive for them to maintain. Maintenance costs on a yearly basis, given the revenue in that area. So I think it was very useful that we actually partnered with the DBSA, because they had that perspective of things. They know the municipalities and their capacities. So they actually brought on another component of capacity building of the municipality for to enable them to take over this new township. And so we went through a review of all this infrastructure to ensure sustainability as it is transferred to the Richardson municipality. So I believe it was very useful. We could have run with the project, had the engineers just designing these things, and then you give them to the municipality, and they're not able to maintain this infrastructure, which in the long run would be a very sad situation.
Is that it? Public comment?
Yes, it is.
Are we all satisfied? I think we'll be more satisfied if we go to Alex, if we, okay?
Yeah, Chair, I just want to ask, what are the chances of this company succeeding after it's going to be handed over to the community? What are the chances of making profits?
The chances, they obviously are going to have to look for quite a strong technical partner, because, I mean, that's in order for them, the mine to be profitable. I think that they are, if with the right kind of partner, they actually can succeed. I mean, there's a lot of recapitalization that's needed, and so it's not going to be one of those things that you can just, you can do some mining immediately. There are certain areas where there are mining blocks, and one could just expand, for example, the Zitzikop area I mentioned. But, I mean, there's also a lot of exploration that still needs to be done, and exploration is costly. But I think with the right technical partner, they could make money.
Thank you very much. Let me thank Alex Cole and DPE for the responses that they have given to us, and to say, as members of this committee, we will still put
Alex go on our program, that we do an oversight visit to come and actually get further information on, and also how the community of Rustenburg can be assisted, because I think the time they were receiving the land, they were so happy that you could see in their faces that poverty relief was in their hands. But now if all these things are happening, it's actually a worrying factor. But we still feel and believe that they will be able to overcome the challenges they are facing. And then we thank you very much. And we thank you, CTE. If you can just hang around, I think lunch will be ready in 10 minutes' time. So you are all invited to lunch. Numbers, thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.